This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is family law. We're focusing on move-aways. When one parent wants to move away with the child or children, we're going to be discussing the issues of custody and visitation. My guests are B.J. Fatum, a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His office is in San Jose. My other guest is Dr. Michael Kerner, a Ph.D., a clinical and forensic psychologist. His office is in San Jose. This year, 2017, he was awarded a distinguished contribution to the field of psychology by the California Psychology Association. And also, going back about 3 years, in 2014, he was named Santa Clara County Forensic Psychologist of the Year. So it's great to have both of you here. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And BJ, why are we doing this at this point?
So move-aways have become a real issue in the family courts. We all know that the Bay Area has become just outstanding with housing and living expenses. It's very expensive to live here. So when you think about it, if there's a divorce on top of it, a lot of people, whether they're even not divorced, people are leaving the Bay Area because they can't afford it. And so as a result, we're seeing an increase in the divorce cases where one parent, usually the mom, is requesting to move away with the children and move out of the Bay Area. And so we're seeing a huge increase.
Really?
Absolutely. I think it's almost double at this point.
Both of us practice in San Jose, and I don't know that this is unique to San Jose. The whole Bay Area is certainly feeling the squeeze of rising prices. But as the cost of housing goes up for both rent as well as purchase, many people can't afford it, and divorce financially, it either devastates people or certainly decreases their ability to survive by themselves, and I think that is leading a lot of folks to need to leave the Bay Area.
Are you finding that with minor, obviously minor children are involved, but are you finding that the move-away situation is such that this creates a real problem, Mike, for the child or children? Well, moving away from one parent stays in one area, the parent that has, most likely you said, BJ, the mom, has the custody of the child, and she and the child or children move away. What's happening with the kids?
So in the best of circumstances, there are going to be some severe detriments occurring in the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
That's where the parents still communicate effectively. As we move away from best-case scenario and we move more toward a parent who might have tremendous venom or fear of the other parent, and the children are encouraged in some cases to not keep a relationship, the more you see that latter scenario develop, the more likely the children will suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a pretty direct linkage between co-parenting post-divorce and children's eventual mental health.
Well, what about this? If there's an issue, of course, if one parent wants to move away, it's probably, I presume, because that parent has a difficulty with the other parent. Is that true, Mike?
Well, I honestly don't know that I could generalize to that.
I see.
Chuck, I might say Okay. Certainly one of the key issues, and there are issues that BJ will talk about, I'm sure, that are case law statutes in California that must be looked at in a relocation case. And relocation is often the title that will be given to these cases.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say the starting point is the reason for the move. And the move is it cannot be to demote the other parent.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to measure that. And that is a very important and significant place to begin. But people move for many reasons, and sometimes it is financial survivability. Sometimes it's for the fact that they were living with a perpetrator and they had to get out of town, so to speak, for domestic violence.
When you say a perpetrator of domestic violence, is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I was referencing,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it can go the gamut from a well-intentioned, loving parent who would love to see the other parent, sometimes called the non-custodial parent, stay involved, all the way to parents who are trying to protect the kids and don't want contact with the other parent. So there's many scenarios as to why people leave, and that's why the state of California, if I'm not mistaken, and BJ will give us a legal statement on it, insists that there be a hearing before someone moves away.
BJ, please.
The legal, there's two major cases that control what we call the move away or relocation cases. The first one was a case called Burgess. And then after Burgess came a case called La Mouget. And essentially what they were saying is, first of all, in the state of California, if one parent has sole custody, they can move away. The other parent can only stop the move away if they can show that the reason for the move away is wrongful. In other words, as Mike was saying, to essentially obstruct the relationship with the non-custodial parent, or that they can show severe detriment to the child if they move away. Otherwise, the parent has a right to move away, and this is if they have sole custody from a permanent custody order, not a temporary order.
But generally speaking, if two parents are living together, before one parent decides to move away, both parents, generally speaking, have joint custody, do they not?
Correct. But a lot of these move-aways come years after separation, years after the divorce.
I got you.
So that brings up the second step. So in the case of the scenario that you were talking about where it's at the time of the separation and they're still going through the divorce, they technically still have joint custody. Or if you've got the scenario where they've had joint custody for years and they've been sharing joint custody for years and one parent chooses to move away, that triggers what we call the La Mouget factor. So the factors that this case set forth in California that the court must consider in an evidentiary hearing to determine the best interest of the child. And what's really, really important in these cases that needs to be emphasized to the parents before they, especially the parent that's thinking about moving away, is the court has to presume that that parent's going to move. So that means I don't want to dip my toe in the pond and see what they're going to say, and if I can't keep my kids, I'm not going. You've got to presume that that parent is going to relocate. And if they do, the court has to decide, well, is it in the best interest of the child to go with that parent or to stay with the other parent? And what would the scheduling look like? Which is where then Mike comes in. There's certain factors that are required under the law to be considered, and then what most almost always happens, and I wouldn't say every time, but most of the time, we then have what we call the custody evaluation, which is where a psychologist or a licensed marriage family therapist, but somebody such as Mike Kerner, who has done numerous ones that I've been involved in with, does a custody evaluation to give these recommendations to the court.
Before Mike, you respond, let me throw this to you, BJ. Under California law, there is mandatory mediation if there are issues between parents. Is that something that can resolve this problem of the potential move away as opposed to going to a custody evaluation that Mike or some other psychologist might do?
It could. So here's the thing that needs to be – you are required to go to mediation before the court can make –
This is mandatory.
Mandatory. The court cannot consider and make long-term or permanent custody orders until the parties have attended mediation.
I see.
Okay? The court can give temporary emergency orders, but they cannot give full custody permanent orders. So a lot of times what most of the courts will do is once a party will then, if it's been several years that the parents have been enjoying a particular custody and visitation order, and then one parent says, files a motion, I want to move away, they'll refer them back to mediation. Now, what's going to happen is it depends on what county you're in. So some counties in the state of California are what we call recommending counties, and some are non-recommending. Santa Clara is a non-recommending. San Mateo, Santa Cruz are recommending. The difference is if you go to a non-recommending county such as Santa Clara, it's confidential. The parents go there. If they can't come to an agreement, and particularly on the move away, most of the time you will not come to an agreement at mediation, then it's confidential. There's no recommendations made to the court. And that's when you're going to probably have to have a custody evaluation.
Okay.
Now, the other side to that is if it's a recommending county such as San Mateo, Santa Cruz, San Francisco, you go to the mediator. And you spend maybe an hour or two, sometimes more, it depends on the county and the resources, and they talk with just the parents and what the parents say. if the parents can't come to an agreement, that mediator, with that little time that they've spent with the parents, are going to make a recommendation to the court.
That sounds to me like that's not enough time to give a proper evaluation and a report to the court. What do you say about this, Mike, please?
The largest percentage of folks who are presenting a relocation to the court do not settle. It's because, let's say you have a family that wants, where one parent wants to move down to San Bernardino, and the other parent lives in San Francisco. It's very hard to, no matter how skilled the mediator or how motivated the parents, to find an agreement that can work, that is a compromise. It is because it is such a monumental, sometimes cataclysmic change to have children relocate, say, from San Francisco to San Bernardino, and then you start thinking about how is the non-custodial parent, for instance, if that parent were still living in San Francisco, how would that parent see the children?
Yeah.
And it becomes a very expensive and difficult process to see your own children versus if they're living in the same community. So it's very hard to settle.
What if the parent who wants to move away, for whatever reason it is, with the child or children, is agreeable with the other parent for sharing I don't know whether you call it visitation. In other words, I presume that some parents don't want to share I may be using the wrong term, custody of the child, but if one parent is willing to cooperate with the other parent, does that create a much easier way for a move away as far as the court is concerned?
So BJ earlier listed Lamouget and Burgess as the controlling cases. There are a number of factors that evaluators must look at if they're going to be doing a competent job. We mentioned not demoting the non-custodial parent as sort of the reason for the proposed move as one factor.
When you say demoting, what do you mean by that?
Demoting, demeaning.
Oh, demeaning. Okay, gotcha. All right.
I'll stay with all the D's. Devastating the relationship between child and parent or children and parent.
Attorneys use obstructing the relationship with the other parent. That's another term we use.
Yeah.
Obstruction. That is a good word. So you're raising the issue of how cooperative is the custodial with the non-custodial parent.
Yes.
So there's a terminology that the court uses for this. It's called gatekeeping. And gatekeeping is something that is measured. It'd be a second measure that an evaluation would attempt to look at. Gatekeeping can range from
G-A-T-E.
Gate, exactly.
Gatekeeping, okay.
And so gatekeeping can range from the ideal, facilitative gatekeeping. An example of that would be if I were divorced and I take my child or children shopping because mother's birthday is coming up or Mother's Day coming up and, you know, a holiday that you celebrate is coming up. And I take them shopping to make sure that they are providing a gift, something loving for their mother.
Mm-hmm.
If father's doing that, father's being a facilitative gatekeeper as an example.
Yeah.
The opposite would be a restrictive gatekeeper. That would be a parent who might say, a father saying to his children negative things that are disparaging about the mother, perhaps bringing them in too close to the conflict, putting them in the middle, making them feel guilty for a loving mom.
Yeah.
That would be certainly having very negative effects on the children, short-term and long-term. The third type of gatekeeping that I would say is measured is called protective gatekeeping. And some more recent
protecting the child from the other parent, is that the idea?
That is exactly right. And Leslie Draws down in L.A., Nancy Olson, very well-respected psychologists, have written on this topic. And protective is important to pay attention to because we have a lot of disturbed adults out there who are parents.
Yeah.
And so you have parents who look restrictive, but in fact, they may be protective. So they look and act like a restrictive gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. The evaluator must really opine on the difference between those two. And certainly, there's a lot of common sense behind that.
When something like this, where there is going to be a hearing before a judge to determine what is the best interest of the child, and I presume that's really mandatory here from the court standpoint. Is the best interest of the child to have one parent, let's say, in San Bernardino and the other parent in San Francisco? The court has to make that decision. What if the child, however, has a great relationship with the other parent and is going to be, if the court permits a move away, it's going to be with one parent down in San Bernardino and not with the other parent, practically speaking, who's in San Francisco? How does the court deal with that?
So that would move us toward a third factor that you have to attempt to analyze, and that is the relationship of the child or the children with each of the parents. We look at terms like attachment. We look at how the child relates, who the child relies on for nurturance and who the child relies on in times of stress. These are factors that are attempted to be assessed, and I'd say that raises probably a third very key variable that you're attempting to look at. But best interest, I would agree, Chuck, is that's the guiding light, best interest. But in all fairness, sometimes in relocation, it's maybe the least worst option, not always the best option, because if you have two very viable, loving, healthy parents, and now you're putting great distance between the parents, well, it's very hard for the children to have the same relationship because, let's just say, mom is allowed, if I'll mm-hmm. use mom as the gender, that is allowed to move to San Bernardino. Now dad, who lives in San Francisco, he can't just go in and see the kid after school. He can't go to that school choir practice. He can't go to her softball practice. He can't go to the game every Saturday. And so you see there is a real defining moment there. And the relationship, takes its toll.
Let me mention a couple of things to you before we continue with some of these issues that we're dealing here. As I mentioned, B.J. Faden is a certified specialist in family law by the California Board of Legal Specialization. If you, wherever you are looking for a free pamphlet from the California Board of Legal Specialization in any one of the 11 specialty fields of law, or if you're looking for a specialist in your county in wherever you may be in California, you can go to the internet, and that, if you want to jot that down, is www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left corner of your computer screen, and you'll see legal specialists. Click that on, and you'll find your county, and you'll find out how you can get any one of the free pamphlets or find out who the certified specialist may be in your area if you're looking for that. Also, wherever you are, I want you to know that if you only listen to the half-hour program, and there are a number of stations in California that only get the half-hour and will play that next week after the live program is done, which is now, you can go to the www.klw.org website, because Your Legal Rights is available as a podcast free of charge, the full hour, and you can find that at www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE. One of the things, Mike, and by the way, everybody, if you tune in a little bit late, my guests are B.J. Faden, a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, and Dr. Michael Kerner, Ph.D. He's a clinical and forensic psychologist. In this year, 2017, he was awarded the Distinguished Contribution to the Field of Psychology by the California Psychology Association. Mike, let me ask you this. If you're to do an evaluation, assuming the parents can pay for this, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, to do a full-blown evaluation as to whether or not the parent who's moving away is appropriate to move away, that may cost between $8,000 to $12,000. Is that right?
And I think that is correct.
And this is pretty much throughout the state of California.
Yes, I can especially speak to the Bay Area counties where I do the bulk of my work. Yes.
I see.
And that does not include if it goes to trial and you need to have the evaluator come and testify.
That's another fee for coming in and testifying.
Absolutely. I've seen when I've had to go to trial on these moveaways, not counting the legal fees, just to the evaluator, you can go upwards of $20,000 easy.
That's incredible. What about the child's a relationship with the community, Mike. If the child is having a wonderful time in his or her grammar school or junior high or even high school, does the court take that into consideration?
So I would say yes, and it interfaces with probably three other factors that need to be looked at. One would be the age of the child or the children.
Yeah.
Because that's going to reference different developmental stages that they're at. Another that may pertain, depending again on the ages of the child, would be the child's wishes. And then you're asking about community resources. The jargoned word for that, we call it social capital.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's very relevant. For instance, if you're looking at a relocation and you have children who are participating in teams, sports, mm-hmm. religious affiliations, physicians, teachers, friends, peer relationships, all of these things. And of course, I've left out family. There may be aunts, uncles, grandparents. Yeah. These are very, very important. But how important depends on the age and the developmental level of the child to varying degrees. And
probably the younger child is much more, I presume, much more important to the court in making the decision than perhaps someone, a young man or young woman who's still a minor who's in the 11th or 12th grade, I presume.
In different ways. When children are very young and they're, say, first year of life, second year of life, or three or four years old, there are certain social capital factors that may be relevant. But now, if you compare that to, say, kids who are 12 and 13, they may be saying, hey, wait a second, I'm not leaving my friends. I'm in middle school.
Yeah,
There's no way. And so these are factors, these three factors, I'd say, social capital, the age of the child, as well as the child's wishes, would be three additional factors that must be assessed.
Let me ask you this. In the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, because of the high-tech industry, I think that's really what it is, the cost of renting has increased markedly. It's terribly expensive. We have a higher population because of the high-tech industry here in the Bay Area. What if someone feels that, the court says, well, I don't feel that I will approve a move away, for whatever reason it is. But the parent who would like to move away can't afford to stay here in the Bay Area. How does the court deal with something like that?
That's the exact problem we run into, and that's what makes the job so difficult, not only just for the court, but the custody evaluator. I mean, there's numerous factors that have to be identified. You know, it goes to one of the biggest is the stability and continuity for the child, trying to do that, because already when the parents that are already divorced, so that kind of removes some stability from the child, and now you're going to take one of the parents away. So that's why it's so important to do these custody evaluations, so that we have a mental health professional that's looking at this family, looking at the children, and trying to develop. You know, it's sad for the one parent that just can't afford to be here.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is the court has to ignore the parents. They have to focus what's best for the child.
I see.
And that's very hard for a lot of parents to really understand and acknowledge, because parents love their children. And in their hearts, they are always doing what's in their best interest. And so it's very hard when a third party who doesn't know them is going to tell them, but that's not in your child's best interest. Mm-hmm. But the court's job is to exactly do that and ignore what's convenient or what's best mm-hmm. for mom, what's mm-hmm. convenient, what's best for dad. We got to look at these kids. And what is the mental health professional saying under these different factors raised by Lamujey and Burgess, or we just say the Lamujey factors now, but based on these factors, what about the kids? What's best for them, to stay or to go?
Mike, let me ask you this. Is it common for you in your practice as a clinical and forensic psychologist, and you are doing a great number of these cases involving move-aways, do you normally do an evaluation of the child?
Certainly.
You do?
Absolutely.
That's what usually happens?
So the standard would be that you must evaluate any child who's a part of this move away request.
I got you.
And the relationship between any child and the parents, plural, and the social capital, and sometimes the psychological functioning of the parents. Typically, there are home visits. So in the great majority of cases that I'm involved in, I will go to a parent's home and spend some time so I can see the community if I'm not aware of it, see the house, look at issues that might pertain to safety. But you learn a lot more about a person when you visit their house. Typically, I'll ask the parent to have me go with them into the child's bedroom to look at just the overall life conditions for the child. And so there are many ingredients that go into a custody evaluation, including many times reading very, very significant documents that attorneys have drafted, so you can have context as to what has occurred.
Is it normal that when you do the evaluation, you're not only doing the evaluation with the child, but you have interviewed and evaluated both parents?
Absolutely.
What if one parent doesn't want to cooperate with you?
So it's a little bit like Noah's Ark. And what I mean by that is everything you're doing is two by two. So if you're testing one parent, you're testing both parents. If you're doing a home visit with one parent, you're doing it with the other. So it is always essential that you are evaluating the children with the parents, their relationships. And so I will pass it to BJ to see if there's more that you wanted to add.
But the fact of the matter is that whether a parent wants to cooperate or not, under the law, the court is going to require that you do cooperate. Is that essentially correct?
Well,
we're just about out of the half hour. Is it yes or no?
Yes, but if they don't, the court's going to consider that.
All right, everybody. This is your time. If you have a question, a general question or a specific question in the area of family law, we don't have to just keep it to move away as if you don't want to. My toll-free number here is 866-798-8255. Again, 866-798-8255. One of the things that I have learned when I've done family law programs, and I've been doing this a long time, everybody, I have found that people are very reluctant, generally speaking, to call in because they're concerned, one spouse is concerned who might want to call in with a question or et cetera, that the other spouse will hear them. If you would, please try to put that aside, and if you have an important question that you feel is confronting you, join us. Give a phony name. Do that. It's 866-798-8255. If you're listening to us on the internet at www.kalw.org, please join us also on the same number, 866-798-8255. We are doing this program, of course, on Wednesday evening. This is October 4th. Time is going too fast this year, much too fast, but join us if you would. Let me tell you again who's with us. We have Dr. Michael Kerner, Ph.D. He's a clinical and forensic psychologist. His office is in San Jose. This year, he was awarded the Distinguished Contribution to the Field of Psychology by the California Psychology Association. My other guest is B.J. Fatum, a specialist in family law. He's certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His office is in San Jose, and B.J. has been an incredible help to me this year and even before this year in the selection of topics and guests, and it's been a wonderful time that I have had with you, BJ.
Thank you, Chuck.
Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. The adding of Marin County is a relatively recent thing in the last year or so. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar Association, here's the number, 415 415- 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. One of the things I want to let you know about, I am not trying to promote legal work for attorneys. I want you to know that. And the lawyer referral service is a great consumer service. If you call your own county bar association lawyer referral service, tell them what the problem is. They'll find someone who's experienced, set you up for a half an hour consultation, and you will pay somewhere between, with minor exception in California, $25 to $35 for the half an hour consultation with the attorney. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep this service going. So that's very valuable, and I hope you don't need it, but it's available to you. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, that's for workers' compensation, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So people are quiet, as I expected, and I encourage you, if you do have a question, a comment, a problem in the family law area, and we're not limiting it to move-aways, join us, please. Don't wait until another 20 minutes from now, because we'll nearly be off the air. Again, the toll-free number, and we're doing the program live on October 4th, 866-798-8255. BJ, what do you find the most difficult thing in handling a move-away case?
The most difficult thing is it's going to detrimentally affect the child no matter what happens.
No matter what. Even if the parents cooperate with each other.
One parent having to move away is just going to cause upheaval in the child's life. Yeah. But as a lawyer, one of the things is trying to explain to my clients the length of time it takes, the process they're going to have to go through, and the cost. It's very, very costly. Because what you're looking at is it can take 6 to 9 months, sometimes even a year, if you're going to go all the way through a trial to get through this process. It starts out with somebody has to file a motion requesting to relocate with the children. That may trigger going back to mediation, even mm-hmm. though they've been to mediation. And then from there, even if it's a recommending mediation county, a lot of times those mediators will say the recommendation is to do a custody evaluation. So most of the time mm-hmm. with a move away, you're going to end up with a custody evaluation. So you're going to go to somebody like Dr. Kerner. That is on an average 60 days. As a matter of law, they're supposed to.
When you say 60 days, from when?
From the time that it is assigned to be evaluated until the report is supposed to be in.
I see. Okay.
And a lot of times the evaluators can't do it within 60 days for all kinds of reasons.
I can see why they wouldn't.
And that could be extended.
Yeah.
And then from there, if there's no agreement to the evaluation, the recommendations, then you're going to go back to a settlement conference with the judge.
An agreement between both parents.
Right, based on the recommendations.
Okay.
And there usually isn't because, again, it's a move away. You're going to go to a settlement conference with the judge, and the judge is going to try and get you to settle. And then if not, you're going to go to a trial.
What if the parents agree and the child is old enough? I know the child has a role before the court. I think the child, and you correct me, BG, if I'm wrong on this, but the child has to be a certain age, and then the court, under California law, is required to have an interview with the child, or am I wrong on this?
No, you're not. What the new law is, it's called Voice of the Child.
Yeah.
And what the law states is that a child age 14 and older, uh-huh. if they express a desire to address the court has to find a way to do that. That can be done many ways, and each judge does it differently. It could be appointing minor's counsel to represent the child.
That means another attorney to represent the child separately.
Correct.
Whereas each parent may have his or her own lawyer.
Correct. And that's about 20% of my cases I volunteer to be minor's counsel.
I see.
And I just represent the child.
I see.
Another way to, and then we bring to the court what the child's preference is. And even then, sometimes the child still says, well, I want to address the court directly. And so the court then has to find a way to do it. There are times that the court will actually talk with the child directly. That's not a lot. But there are times where the court will finally talk to the child. And that's done with the – and the reason why the children usually will back out, what they don't realize is when they say they're going to address the court and they want to talk to the judge, what they don't realize is it's not confidential what they talk to the judge about.
Yeah.
Both parents are going to know, because under the 14th Amendment due process, the parents are entitled to know what the child says to the judge. And what the judge says to the child.
Are the parents entitled to be in wherever the judge and the child is and listen to this interview?
Some counties do it that way.
I see.
For the most part, what they do is privately in the judge's chambers, but there's a court reporter that has to take down everything.
See. Okay.
And some judges will ask each side to submit questions. Once the child knows that the parents are going to know exactly what they say, that's not a comfortable position.
No,
and
it's
Mike advise at this point, we do a teen orientation in Santa Clara County we created. And we do an orientation and where the kids, before – if they say they want to address the court, they're then referred first to teen orientation that we give. And it's a PowerPoint and participation.
To kind of educate the child.
We educate
on what you can or cannot do or what's expected.
Correct. And then at the end of this presentation, we pass around a slip of paper. Do you still want to address the court? Do you still want to talk to the judge? And once they find out that it's not confidential, I put on the orientations, very few want to.
Really?
Because what they're going to do, and we put these orientations on, it's one attorney and one mental health professional that volunteer to do this. And we explain to them, whatever happens, if you talk to the judge, your parents are going to know, and it's going to alter your relationship with both parents forever.
Yeah, I can.
And
understand.
Mike can address.
Let's
that
do
works.
This. We've got a number of people who want to talk to you now. Let's start with Maria. Maria, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. My question is, my brother is incarcerated, and he has a child with his ex-wife. And his ex-wife has now threatened to take full custody of the child. My question is, do I, as an aunt, or my parents, the grandparents, do we have any rights to the child?
That's very interesting. Very good question, Maria. If you turn your radio back on, BJ, please.
Sure. We're talking about grandparents' rights, and we did that program on it. But
right.
In the case where the parent is not available to exercise visitation, that the grandparents at that time can petition the court for visitation to maintain the relationship. It's not as easy as people think, but there are ways to do it. And what you have to show is that there has been a bond, an ongoing
between
relationship.
The child and the grandparents.
And the grandparents. And
what about the child and his or her aunt, Maria here? What's the story there?
There's really no law to substantiating
okay.
that. However,
mm-hmm.
I have used if there's been a close bond where in the case I had was an aunt, had actually raised the child for a period of time.
Mm.
What we did was we requested to be joined as a necessary party because they were important and it would be detrimental to the child to not have any further contact.
Well, hopefully that's of some interest to you, Maria, but it sounds like perhaps this was not fit you in terms of the very brief discussion you gave us. But again, if you're really concerned about this, I highly suggest, and you're in San Mateo County, you might want to call a lawyer referral service and speak to a family law attorney and see what your situation might give to you in terms of whatever your rights may be in terms of having some connection with a child. All right, we have Gina. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks so much.
Sure.
So I'm in the midst of a move away now. The evaluator, I was moving out of state for work and two children here. And the evaluator recommended that the children stay because they, for school reasons, and also that they had family that was in the city where we were. So in reality, though, all of that family moved to the state that I had moved to, if that makes any sense. So We decided to go to trial, but basically the judge said, I'm probably going to go ahead and like go along with the evaluator. So I moved back to the state to be near my children, but I'm in a different county now.
Yeah.
And so now I'm doing commuting. You know, I left my job there and I'm doing commuting here. And so the problem is now I'm with family. I have a really large family and we're all in one county. And then the father is in another county with zero family members. And my kids are going to school with, you know, in the father's area. So, I just don't know if it's going to be like another move away, for me to try to get them to school in the county that I'm at now, because we have a huge support system there. I don't know if that is, that makes sense.
Gina, let me ask you this. Who has custody of the children right now?
It's joint.
It is joint. So I see. Okay.
It is.
All right. And so you share with your former spouse custody of the children, is that right?
Yes.
And but they are going to school in the area where your former husband lives, is that right?
That's correct.
And so, BJ, go ahead.
From a legal standpoint, it is probably going to be considered another move away. You're requesting... It depends. Now, what? It's still a move away, but since you already have joint custody and you don't want to change the custody, you just want to change the parenting schedule so that they are changing schools and primarily during the school week are with you, you're asking for just a change in schedule. That would be a best interest test, not really a substantial change of circumstances, which is required for custody. But again, because they're going to be relocating school, friends, activities, yeah, the court's going to consider it a move away. So you're going to go through the Lamouget factors again. And I don't know, under the circumstances, Mike would have a better insight as to with regard how did that really affect the children.
Mike, generally speaking, how would you deal with this?
So the first thing I want to say is these cases are very complex, and
yes,
we don't know the ages of the children.
No,
and
we don't.
Of
yeah.
course, a myriad number of other details.
Of course.
So I would say to Gina, think carefully about getting a consult. Every county has a Family Court Services approved list of people who've gone through training who do evaluations. You might call one of them off of that list and consult, or consult with a family attorney in your county to get some sense of the pluses and minuses of what you're thinking about, because mm-hmm. There's a real cost benefit here.
Yeah.
It puts a lot of stress, not just financially, as BJ had mentioned earlier, but emotionally onto the children.
Sure.
And typically, when parents file actions, quote, against each other, that's how it's perceived, it increases the stress onto the kids. So there's a lot to weigh, and she has mentioned that there's more family where she is, less family where dad is, but there's many other factors
yeah.
that have to be considered.
You're now in Alameda County, Gina. Gina, are you still there?
Oh, yes, I am. I am in Alameda County.
You're in Alameda County, and have you consulted with the family law attorney with respect to the latest situation?
I have, mm-hmm. And we will, I have, but it is also complex,
yeah.
And I just wanted to hear someone else's perspective, yeah. because I feel as though this whole, you know, the whole move away, I kind of did everything I was told I was supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
And it didn't seem to work,
yeah.
And I really just obviously want what's best for my children with less, you know, traumatic, but the fact is I can't get back to the county where they are.
May I ask you this, if you don't mind? The attorney who you have recently consulted with, is this person a certified specialist in family law?
I believe so, but you're going to definitely, you've made me very curious. I think I should verify that.
Yeah, frankly, my role as the host of this program and certainly my professional role with the district attorney's office in San Mateo has been as a consumer advocate. If you still feel things are up in the air and you can afford an initial consultation, I think you should make sure if you have been talking with a certified specialist in family law, and if not, I highly recommend. This is an awfully complicated area. In my early practice of the law, and this goes back about 50 years ago, I've been a lawyer over 50 years, believe it or not, I had two family law cases down in L.A. County. And I found family law to be the most difficult cases that I have ever handled. And I have handled all kinds of economic crime and all kinds of civil, complicated civil cases. So my suggestion is, if you want another opinion or you want to try to educate yourself more, go to seek to determine if the attorney you've been talking with has been a certified specialist. If not, get another opinion and go to the Board of Legal Specialization. That's www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left of your computer for legal specialist, click on Alameda County and find out who they are in your area. And I thank you for calling, and good luck. I hope you're able to make heads out of this.
Thank you, and thank you so much for the program
sure.
tonight.
Very nice to have you call. Good
Chuck,
luck to
Chuck,
you.
Chuck, may I add one
yeah,
comment?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes,
just
please.
To follow up on Gina,
yeah.
I heard her say a quick comment about her husband's in one county, she's in another, and she
yeah.
can't get back there.
Right.
So I'm just guessing that part of the reason she can't get back to that county is the financial difficulties of moving back to some counties in the Bay Area. And
sure.
again, that's the burden that we have been talking
well,
about.
Well, it
tonight.
May also be because she has an employment, you know, up here in the Bay Area. And if she moved to the other county where the father is, it jeopardizes her job, I suppose. But in any event, thank you very much for calling, Gina. And let's talk with Mark. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I'm calling because I have a pretty complicated situation, really very much in this vein. And part of it is, so me and my daughter's mother have equal custody. We don't have a custody agreement, and we're actually in the process of getting divorced, but we've been separated for 8 years now. We don't have a custody agreement, but we split time with her equally. Mm-hmm. And my daughter's mother wants to move to, she wants to move out of state. We both are great parents. I think that we're both great parents. I think that, both situations are good for Mina. However, we disagree on if she should go to school here in the Bay Area or school where she's moving to. Each of us wants her at their house for the school year. If there's equal custody and she'd be moving to a place that doesn't have any of her family or she doesn't have any previous relationship with. Now, do you have any inkling for which way the court would rule in a situation like that? She's about to be 10 years old, and we both want what's best for her.
Oh, boy.
So we can never guarantee or predict
uh-uh.
what a judge will do.
Uh-uh.
However, the first thing that would concern me is that there is no orders. There's nothing established.
Yeah, yeah.
So just for protection, I think it would be important to get this moving to establish the joint custody from a legal standpoint so that you're triggering the court having to determine, regardless, they have to determine the move away.
Yeah.
And again, those factors are, you know, the reason for the proposed move, the age, the stability, the and stability and continuity, the community ties, and the relationship with each parent. And again, that would be a job that Mike would do and make recommendations. It certainly sounds like, and Mike can pipe in on this, I don't know what the reason for the move is, but if you're going somewhere that there's no family, there's no friends.
Financial.
Yeah. But that Mike, this is what Mike does on his evaluations.
Mike, what comments? And of course, please, if you would, Mark, understand that doing a radio program like this, my guest, the attorney, cannot give specific legal advice.
Of course. Of course.
You understand that. And one of the things is, I see you're calling from San Francisco. If you have not yet consulted with an attorney, have you or not?
No.
Okay. I think what you owe to yourself, to begin with, if I may suggest this to you, I think you might want to call the lawyer referral service of the San Francisco Bar. See if you can get an initial consultation, half-hour consultation. I'm sure you can. And you know, talk with an attorney and start to educate yourself about what the positives and negatives are. And do you have the San Francisco Bar Lawyer Referral Service number, or do you want me to give it to you?
Is it the 415-989-1616?
That's right, that's right. And would you, Mike, give some thoughts to Mark about this, please?
Well, Mark, my heart goes out to you because I think you're entering into a very difficult phase of life here. It sounds like since your daughter was approximately two, you and your ex have shared equally, or at some point you moved to equal sharing. As your ex moves to a new community, and you said a new state, the factors that I think BJ was just referencing, certainly at least those factors will be looked at. One of the other factors maybe that we haven't mentioned would be the plan. You know, what's mother's plan if she moves with your 10-year-old? How would it work? The court will be interested in that. Continuity and stability probably are the words that would be your friend right now, but no one can sit with you and tell you how a court is going to determine this. That is why these evaluations very commonly will often take 30, 40 hours of investigative work to have the court, who is the finder of fact, be able to rely on an opinion. So I do really encourage you to consult very strongly. And the advice, if you heard it given earlier by Mr. Fadum, was to get a parenting plan in place. Yeah. You have for 8 years been sharing custody. You need to make sure that that is designated in writing. So that's part of the protection that you're looking for.
Mark, what is your relationship with your wife? I know you're separated, but what is your relationship with her right now?
We speak through her partner.
Oh, okay. You don't speak to her directly?
No.
Because my thought had been if your relationship with her was a good one, a good communication, I had thought maybe both of you could have an initial consultation with a family law attorney and begin to educate yourselves. But that doesn't seem to be the situation, obviously. So,
well, it's not entirely out of the question.
Yeah.
It's just we're trying to communicate effectively through him. We just have a
Maybe the three of you go to see a family law attorney. I'm being a little bit facetious, but maybe if you have a good communication with her current partner, maybe this is something to do to try to, because obviously if she leaves, I presume he's going to leave with her. We're going to take another call. Good luck to you, Mark.
Okay, thank you so much.
Take care. Here's a question that came in to the studio from Martin, who helps me on the program. Can new information or new witnesses be added to the record at any time as it comes up? Or is there a statute of limitation which applies to custody and visitation?
I'm not sure I understand the question. It sounds like if you've already had a trial, and the court, and when we say submitted, that means, okay, evidence is closed. If the court hasn't made a decision yet, if new witnesses come forward, we can move the court to reopen evidence that has become newly discovered. It's up to the court whether they're going to allow that. Once the court has issued its decision and judgment, then it's a matter of is there evidence that has come to light after the judge has issued his order that could not and was not available at the time. Mm-hmm. You can do a motion for reconsideration. If you find that there was a mistake, or you find that somebody perjured themselves, you can try and ask for that order to be set aside. It was based on fraud. It's very, very difficult. If we're talking that there was an order and then there was a change of circumstances, we've gotten evidence or something, things changed and it's no longer working, that's a different motion. That's to modify, because now
to modify the move away order, is that right?
To modify the move away order or whatever that previous order was regarding custody.
Okay. All right. So that's something to look into. We have a couple more minutes left, and I'm going to invite John. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And, go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen.
Go ahead, John.
So a question I have on the previous caller, he actually, he sounds like he's about to go into what I've just dealt with. And my daughter, I'm a proud father of a 9-year-old daughter. And I live in San Francisco. She was living in Alameda County. And she did get the mother got the move away order. And we have 50-50 legal. I have about 25% custody time. And my question is, the mother is already, she did get the move away basically by saying that she would be, she's a traveling nurse. And she basically works in Walnut Creek, and she comes down here quite often. She basically said that she would do some homeschooling, and also she would be bringing my daughter down twice a month to see me. And I, of course, I didn't want this because I thought it'd be very hard on my daughter. And
you know, John, we are coming very close to the end of the program. Could you pose a question, please?
Yes. The question is, the mother's already talking about cutting down the visits to one time a month, and she seems like she's backpedaling. It's only been a month, and she's already saying that she wants to change the schooling and such. Do I have to go back in court here? Do I have to? She's up in Washington State. What are my options?
California issued the custody order, I assume, and then therefore, under the UCCJEA, the Uniform Child Custody Custody and Enforcement Act, California has retained jurisdiction. So if it's not working and you want to modify what the court ordered, you need to go and move the court here again.
Does that help you? Does that help you, John?
And I would just request, you can do a request for order to modify that. It's not working. It's detrimental to the child. And ask for a little bit more of a clarified order.
We have run out of time. I thank you for calling, John.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank you, gentlemen, very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. B.J. Fatham, specialist in family law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization offices in San Jose, and Dr. Michael Kerner, Ph.D., clinical and forensic psychologist with offices in San Jose. Thank you very much, B.J. and Mike. Really nice to have you here. Next time on Your Legal Rights, our topic is medical malpractice. What is medical malpractice, and what's involved in deciding to file a medical malpractice lawsuit? My guest will be Barry Nace, N-A-C-E, a civil trial specialist certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy with law office in Washington, D.C. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution, as we do have some stations that carry the program outside of California. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.